welcome to Midpoint. We are your midweek, mid-morning source for news and public affairs from a local perspective. I'm Shelley Reback, and I'm here today with
Janet Scherberger.
And we have Frank answering phones for us. And if you'd like to join our conversation, you can call in to 813-239-9663, email us at dj@wmnf.org, or text us at 813-433-0885. Well, it is a new year, January 2022. Hard to believe. And with the prevalence of Omicron COVID lately, it feels just like January last year, right before we got the vaccines. If we're smart, we're masking up, eating outside, and trying not to breathe around other people again. With a 948% increase in COVID cases in Florida as of yesterday, yes, I said 948% increase, it's scary times. In fact, it is again what I call the most dangerous time of the year in Florida. But no, it's not only because of COVID, and it's not even hurricane season or shark week. It is the start of the new Florida legislative session season, soon to be known in history as the super spreader session. It is an always dangerous time for the citizens of our state because this is the time of year when so many of those Florida legislators, let's be honest, mostly Republicans, who've been looking longingly and lustfully at all of the crazy unconstitutional laws their counterparts are passing in Texas, come together in Tallahassee every January to try to out-Texas the laws of Florida, to the detriment of Florida citizens. And considering how especially crazy Texas has been this year, what with heartbeat bills and abortion bounty hunting and laws that allow anyone over the age of 21 to carry a handgun pretty much anywhere in public, Texas has provided Florida with a pretty frightening legislative roadmap to follow this year. But not to worry, not to be outdone, some of our own Florida legislators, again, mostly rural Republicans, have their own crazy to bring to the party in Tallahassee, and they have already proposed some truly extraordinary affronts to the Constitution, to common sense, that either will or won't be voted into law this year. Abortion rights, voting rights, critical race theory, academic freedom, and that perennial punching bag, Florida public education, are all targets of the Republican-dominated Florida legislature this session. We will be talking about some of the dangerous proposed laws against these targets today in Midpoint's annual Florida Legislative Preview Show. But it's not all poison and pinstripes in Tallahassee. There are some bright spots. Our guests today are two local legislators who are standing tall in the breach, trying to be a bulwark against the proposed assaults against constitutional rights, against the public good, and against simple common decency attacked by some of these most egregious legislative proposals. Our guests have been sent to Tallahassee to do the people's business, and they are doing their best to defend against the tide of nonsense and are trying to enact laws that actually benefit the citizens who sent them there. They will tell us what they are doing and what we can expect from this legislative session. Later in the show, after 10:30, we will be joined by Representative Andrew Learned, Democrat from Florida House District 59 from the Brandon, Sefner, and Points East area. But first, I'd like to virtually welcome Janet Cruz, Florida State Senator from Senate District 18, representing Hillsborough County in Tampa, who is with us by telephone today. She previously served in the Florida House, representing her West Tampa district from 2010 until her election to the Senate in 2018. So she is a Tallahassee veteran and knows just how dangerous a legislative session can be. Welcome, Senator Cruz. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, Shelley. Good morning, ladies. I think you said that so eloquently. So
I think we need to bring Senator Cruz's phone volume up. I'm not sure we can hear her so clearly.
Can you hear me now? Is that better?
It's pretty low, but hopefully the listeners can hear you well, and they will call us in and tell us, no doubt, if they can't. So tell us, Senator Cruz, am I wrong to fear what laws might emerge from the session this year? And, of course, we have redistricting, probably the biggest issue facing the legislature yet to come. So what are we looking at when you meet?
Well, I will tell you this. I will say that all of this crazy legislation where you say where there's an attempt to mirror Texas, really, in my opinion, is all a wag the dog, because what really matters is redistricting and the gerrymandering that the leadership in Florida continues to purport in an effort to withhold and hold the majority. You know, in our state, we are really about 50-50 on registration. You know, they tout the fact that they have surpassed us by a little bit. When I say they, I mean the Republican registration. But we really are, for all intents and purposes, about 50-50, and the trajectory of independence is skyrocketing. But nevertheless, if you have a state where you have half Republicans and half Democrats, you would expect that your districts would be representative of the population. But today in the House, there are about 100, there are 120 seats, and of those 120 seats, only 44 are Democratic seats in the House, and that is because of gerrymandering. There's there's no other way to put it other than gerrymandering rather than go after an honest vote. Let's just cheat and create districts where
it does seem pretty clear that the draft maps are politically motivated, because, for example, there's four current congressional maps drafted in the Senate Reapportion Committee and two in the Florida House Redistricting Committee, and every single one of those drafts would split Tampa into multiple districts, which has never been done before. Split Tampa.
And all intentional, you know, just take four corners and, you know, I'm assuming in their opinion that Hillsborough County has become, leaning too Democratic, so let's split the power up and take care of that. Also, you take a look at the growth, explosive growth in Orlando, mostly in the Puerto Rican communities. Everyone assumed that that's where a new congressional seat would go. But rather than put a seat there that almost certainly would lean Democratic, they moved the lines so that the new seat would be in Lakeland, which would probably be more Republican than Democratic.
Yeah. And I guess Senator Ray Rodriguez, who's the Estero Republican who chairs the Senate Reapportion Committee, has said that anyone who thinks changes must be made to the draft should act sooner rather than later, because the Senate could finalize its proposed maps in the first week or couple weeks of the session. Do you think that's what's going to happen, that they'll be right away?
Absolutely do. I mean, I think the word out is that the Senate has no intention of changing anything, that they feel like they put out a fair map.
And there's very little that the public can do to influence this at this point. Is that right? I mean, not...
Ten years ago, we did a roadshow, and I was lucky enough to be on the committee, and we traveled to cities all around the state and listened to what the people of Florida had to say. At this time, not one meeting, nothing open to the public other than the committee meetings where most of the maps had already been drawn and presented.
So as far as there being some sort of call to action to the public, there's really nowhere for the public to register their concerns or their complaints other than with their individual legislators, I guess.
That's correct.
And if your individual legislator happens to be a Democrat instead of a Republican, the odds of them being able to influence the process is pretty slim. Is that right?
It is. And, you know, that's one of the reasons I talk so often about the governor's race and the fact that if we can remember, the Republicans now for the past 25 years, I think, have held the majority in both the House and the Senate and the governor's mansion. But if we could elect a Democratic governor, at least because of gerrymandering, that's our best chance, honestly, then we can at least veto some of these terrible bills that are presented and passed. So, you know, that's where our work is, along with several other races that will be tough races. We need to really get behind this governor's race and push for a win for the Democrats. Any civic book will tell you that government is at its best when it's more balanced. This process right now is so lopsided that they can just, you know, push any terrible bill through, and the governor will sign it if it's one of his initiatives, that being the awful abortion bills or critical race theory.
Yeah, let's talk about some more of these, the parade of horribles that we've been hearing about that may come out of this legislative session. Let's maybe start with something so fundamental, which is voting laws. Back in November, he proposed this election integrity measure that included establishing an election police force, essentially. And he wants to have this big bureaucracy of election police that I think it was Andrew Warren, our Hillsborough County State Attorney, pointed out in some report that I read that what are they going to do for 10 months out of the year? Sit around and wait for election time? I mean, it seems like an enormous bureaucratic force costing a lot of money to do what? Especially because we've established no real problem with election fraud in the state of Florida. These are solutions looking for problems.
Indeed. And the all of his rhetoric does not match the reality. I think it is, I think it is an insult to people like Craig Latimer, who have done an excellent job in making sure that voters have access and that we have fair elections. And, you know, there's very little in the way of proving voter fraud yet. You know, that is the monster that they purport, and it's ridiculous. And keep in mind that all of this that you see is, it's not about a governor that's running for re-election in Florida. It's about a governor who is running for president.
Right.
And
right.
It's
right.
not a governor who is looking at the primary voter in Idaho and the primary voter in Wisconsin who will vote for him based on some of these ridiculous bills that he put
right.
forward.
So and
it's
that proposal,
really not a presidential. It's not at all about what's good for Florida or Floridians.
Right. That proposal is not actually about uncovering election fraud. It's about whipping up his base. The base and having them feel like he's a hero in Florida.
Right. And one of the ways that we know that to be true is because he's complaining about voting drop boxes. He hates them, but he can only do so much about them in Florida because key Republican lawmakers in Florida support the drop boxes. So this right. kind of ridiculous call to establish an election police force is something that he can do that they're willing to fund. Fund, apparently, we'll see, I guess, if they're willing to fund this big bureaucracy that does nothing for 10 months out of the year, because he has to keep his Florida leadership happy, but at the same time, as you both say, you know, excite his base around the country. It's insane.
And more specifically, not just his base, but all of these, all of these mega Trump supporters, that's really the people that he wants to keep engaged. He knows, he knows that the Republicans who are lifelong Republicans are going to vote for the Republican nominee. But he wants all of these, rabid Make America Great Again folks to stay engaged. And that's really his fear, is that they won't be engaged without Trump around anymore. So that's why he is, banging the pots and jumping from the top rope, because he needs to keep those people irritated. He needs to keep them stimulated until he gets to a presidential run. But in the end, we as Floridians suffer because he is not fixated on what's best for Florida. He's fixated on what's best for him.
Oh, interesting that two of the things that you've talked about, Senator, that are so significant. The first two things we've talked about are really important on a national stage. So the redistricting, which has national implications, and the this election law, which is for national reasons, has nothing to do with Florida.
Not at all.
Right.
Not at all.
And a lot of what you said, just stirring the pot to keep these people engaged until the presidential primaries, can be seen in some of these like really truly crazy things, like after his anti-riot bill, which is being challenged in the courts, the governor's...
Or I'd call it an anti-protest bill.
Yeah, and that's actually what it was, is an anti-protest bill. Mm-hmm. The governor's latest target, similar ridiculous target, is critical race theory. Mm-hmm. And apparently there's a proposal that's been coined the, quote, Stop Woke Act. And can we just take a minute to note how juvenile and petty this governor has been in his politics lately? His roadshow in Brandon at the Brandon car dealership because of the popularity of this "Let's Go Brandon" phrase. I mean, how juvenile and petty is that?
It's ridiculous. I mean, let's just take COVID. You know, rather than take the advice of medical professionals who spent their entire careers preparing for a pandemic like this, we have a governor that's still selling campaign gear, mocking Dr. Fauci and making light of mask wearing as a public health measure.
Right.
You don't hear him talk about getting vaccines, which he knows is what's best for people, but it doesn't poll well in the Midwestern states. It doesn't do his base well on a national level. So instead, he talks about the monoclonal antibodies rather than
only one of which works on Omicron, apparently.
Right.
And so, you know, here he is complaining that the federal government hasn't given Florida enough monoclonal antibodies because they're restricting the distribution of the Regeneron series because they don't work on Omicron, according to science.
Then I heard someone make a comment to me yesterday when I was talking to someone who is pretty conservative, and he made a remark about how he'd had this twice and thought this vaccine was supposed to take care of that. I said, you know what? You're alive, and you might not have been alive without the vaccine. It's just so ridiculous the way I see folks spinning this. It's insanity. Why wouldn't you just get the vaccine and not risk your life? I don't understand it at all. I just...
Right. And these are the same people who say, I'm not going to put that in my body, yet they're willing to go because DeSantis tells them to go for monoclonal antibodies. Do you know what's in that? I mean, are you any more comfortable with the science on the monoclonal antibodies than you are with the vaccine science?
Someone is sitting there with smoking a pack of cigarettes a day and drinking some Jack Daniels and saying, I'm not going to get that vaccine. I don't want to put that into my body.
Right.
It's just, you know, again, the rhetoric doesn't match the reality. And, how many people are laying on with a respirator on a deathbed saying, I was stupid, I should have had that vaccine.
We've got
a
text message from Bubba who says, this is about DeSantis. Just after his presser yesterday, DeSantis sent out a fundraising email. More proof that he gives zero poops about his job and all the poops about running for president. So thank you, Bubba, for that. Senator, we only have you for a couple more minutes, so
more to talk about.
So tell us what are some bills that you're sponsoring that are of particular that are important to you, important to you.
A bill that's really important to me, and I'm pushing and pushing and pushing, is a bill that limits the copay, caps the cost of insulin per month. Insulin is a drug that's 100 years old. The scientists that developed it sold the patent for $1 so that everyone could have access to insulin. But in the last 8 years, insulin prices have quadrupled.
Mm.
And
is this something that a state can mandate?
We can mandate a cap. And this is my idea. And the intent here is to take the consumer out of this equation. Let Big Pharma and let the health plans duke it out over who pays what for a drug that should be free. It costs pennies to make a vial of insulin, yet they're selling it at $600.
It's terrible.
It's equivalent to a generic antibiotic. It should be available for free. And by the way, I just saw an article that Publix now has a list of 72 drugs that are completely free at Publix on the list. So folks, take a look and see what's on that list and what you have available. There are many drugs there.
Yeah, it could even be cheaper to take a free drug than it could be to put it through your insurance and
absolutely.
Have to pay for a prescription.
If you have a cap on your prescription allowance,
right.
If you get these drugs for free, it could help free up the money for something else.
Well, how's that faring in the so far? Is it in committee?
Every year I receive more and more committee meetings, but Big Pharma pushes back. So we just keep pushing back, you know, and every year we have a few more committees where it's heard. So we'll come to an agreement eventually, and I hope it's this year.
I noticed that another bill that you're sponsoring would prohibit a confession by a minor from being used in court if it was obtained through officer deception, which I, you know, as a former criminal defense attorney, think is a fantastic bill. But I wonder, how would this be proven if all confessions are not required to be recorded? There was a push several years ago for a law that required all confessions to be recorded in the state, and I don't think that succeeded. So I wonder how that would be proven. And also, was there a particular criminal case that inspired you to file this bill?
No, not exactly. It was a bill that a House member brought to me and felt strongly about. So I'm working that bill with them, and we realized that there'll be some confessions on that bill. But we think it's something that's worth going forward on. Also, another bill that I have filed is one that allows for protections based on domestic violence to be transmitted electronically. Right now, if you're sending those, they have to actually be mailed by U.S. mail, which adds several days to the process when a woman or a man is seeking protection from a
significant other. That seems so sensible.
I couldn't believe that those kind of stops were still in place. So we're going to try to move that one forward this year. It could make a big difference for someone who's feeling threatened.
Yeah, and there are a number of bills coming up having to do with marijuana. I know that Senator Brandis has got a number of bills having to do with marijuana. How do you think those are faring?
I think that they'll do relatively well. I mean, it's an election year, so you'll have the House and Senate conservatives kind of shy away from it. I have a good bill that allows for any veteran to forego, or it provides that any veteran can forego the fees for a medical marijuana card in the state of Florida.
Yeah, because it's expensive. It's like over $200.
It's ridiculous. And also, I mean, you know, if you can take a veteran off of a Xanax or something that's far more addictive and put them, or if they find that relief with cannabis, then so be it. So I want to try to help them have access to that.
Yeah, that seems like another very sensible thing for you to propose. I mean, really, these are the kinds of things that actually help citizens of Florida, you know, that aren't just grandstanding opportunities, and we certainly appreciate that. You know, I did notice that there's in addition to Senator Brandis with his criminal justice bills, even some of the Republican House members are starting to have a little bit of compassion and what seems to be good sense on some criminal justice issues. I noticed that Tracy Koster from Safety Harbor and Palm Harbor area has a bill to allow time off of probation for good behavior if a defendant completes life skills programs and that's certainly something that I think would help with reintegrating people into society quicker and more securely than just keeping someone on probation.
I completely agree. If, you know, we release someone, and if we're setting them up for failure, and we're contributing to their rate of recidivism, then what good are we really doing here?
Mm-hmm, right.
We need to set up programs. I talked to a gentleman who was released, I think, on Orient Road, but he had to report to his probation officer at XYZ by a certain time in the morning, and he walked all night to get there so that he wouldn't violate his provisions. He had no money, no family. It was just really a crazy situation. But
well,
we really want people to get back on track. We have to do more.
Right. And we know that we have to let you go. But before I do, I just want to make sure, is there anything that we haven't talked about that you think it's important for the listeners of WMNF to know about this session?
Just to stay focused on redistricting. This will affect our state and the representatives and the senators and the Congress, congressmen for the next 10 years.
Yep.
And we just have to stop this gerrymandering. We fought hard for fair districts. We fought very hard. And what was their response to that? Their response was, let's appoint people in the Supreme Court that will, that will agree with us based on this. So now we don't even have the court. I don't feel that we even have the court
right.
to protect us. So we're really working at a deficit here. So pay attention to redistricting and raise your voices. That's all we can do right now.
And pay attention to the governor's race, as you said earlier.
Absolutely.
Because that's our only opportunity to maybe put some roadblocks against some craziness in the legislature.
Well, and ultimately,
it's one of the few seats that's not gerrymandered. We have a fighting chance there.
Mm-hmm. The most important thing is to vote. Ultimately,
right.
In 2022,
absolutely.
Get out there and vote. Especially if you don't like the way things are going, make sure you vote, because at least for Democrats, a lot of times they don't turn out, even though those numbers are there. That's what part of the problem
right.
is.
Well, I'm counting on Val Demings to convince us all to get out there and get folks excited.
I do. We do have an email from somebody before you go, Senator. Her name is Eva, and she said, I got on late, not sure which senator was on, but yes, as a parent of a son with type 1 diabetes that need to have it, it should be free, and if not free, it should cost very little for patients that need it. Eva, this is Senator Janet Cruz that is on the phone with us right now that sponsored that bill to cap the cost of insulin. So,
to Eva, I will say this very quickly, Janet, and that is that I've talked with parents who are looking at their diabetic children who are aging off their plan at 24 or 25 because they're in college. And these kids are looking for jobs within the state, within government, or at a big business that has good health insurance, because that's how they have to decide the trajectory of their life, is where can I go that will cover my insulin?
Yeah, it's a matter of life and death.
A small business, it's impossible. I'll have to pay $1,200 a month for my insulin. This is not fair. It's nothing short of price gouging. It's equal to that of a drug cartel that they are profiting off of a drug that's this old.
And not for nothing, but isn't it Senator Joe Manchin's daughter who
yes.
was the one that raised those insulin prices so unconscionably large? It's her company.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, it's like the EpiPen debacle that we saw. There are two manufacturers that make this drug now. President Biden's administration is proposing a $35 insulin availability to anyone that needs it. But I want this in Florida law so that for administrations to come in the future, we're still protecting Floridians with a price cap.
Well, thank you for doing that, Senator
You're
Cruz. Again, this is Senator Janet Cruz. We thank you for being with us. We appreciate your overview of the next upcoming Florida legislative session, and we'll look to have you back on the show as the session ends, maybe, and talk about where we've been. So thank you very
Great.
Much.
Thanks, ladies. Take care.
Thanks.
And if you are interested in joining the conversation, you can give us a call at 813-239-9663 or email us at dj@wmnf.org, or you can text us at 813-433-0885.
We got an email from David who says, I find it interesting how shameless many of these crazy Florida legislators are. I've seen a few recent articles in the Tampa Bay Times where lobbyists clearly wrote the legislation and the legislator is just like, meh, that's how it works in Tallahassee. Shameless and shameful all at once. That's from David And I can tell you, when I was a reporter in Tallahassee, we saw all the time bills that were written by lobbyists. And literally, one time I pointed out to a lawmaker who was sponsoring a bill written by a lobbying group, something that was in the bill that he wasn't even aware of. And his staff actually thanked me for pointing it out to them. And I can also say that in my time working at Tampa International Airport on the other side as a government affairs person, I wrote some legislation both at the state level and at the federal level. So it does happen, David.
And I think that that's one of the things that Republicans we've seen are particularly organized about. Some of these huge lobbying clients like Associated Industries of Florida and the Florida Chamber of Commerce. Those are the organizations that are very, very active in proposing legislation. And a lot of it comes from that ALEC group,
right,
which is national.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Midpoint on WMNF with Janet Scherberger and Shelley Reback, and we're doing a legislative preview. We just had Senator Janet Cruz on the show, and we now have Representative Andrew Learned on the line to talk about what's happening in the legislature. Are you there, Representative?
I am. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. And if you want to join
glad we get to talk House side is the best side, right?
That's right. And if you are just tuning in, you can join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, or you can email us at dj@wmnf.org. We do have somebody on the call, on the phone right now that I want to bring in to ask a question, Andrew. And this is Kim Bernstein, and she has a question.
Hi there. I'm an individual. I live in Tampa, and I'm calling because there are two Senate bills on the calendar that I'm hoping that will be addressed, Senate Bill 262 and 560, which basically just fixed the Wrongful Death Act. So that if your mother's in the hospital and dies from gross negligence, like an instrument in, and you're an adult, or she's single, no one can hold the hospital accountable. And the reverse for children. This bill came up last year. It really hasn't been as much problem in the House as in the Senate. But it sets up something where if a person dies from medical negligence and they don't have a spouse or minor child, they can proceed with the suit if they don't die. If they die, no one can hold the hospital accountable. I found that every single person I've talked to who doesn't have an interest is really supportive of this bill, and I would love to know your opinion on it, and if you're going to vote yes when it comes up to committee.
So we have Representative Andrew Learned in the House on the line now.
I'm sorry
we didn't get to the call when we had Janet Cruz from the Senate side on, but is there a companion House bill? Is there a companion House bill, Kim?
There sure is. It's 6011. And 6039 by Representative Hinson and Representative Roach. I don't have the Senate co-sponsors up, but there are several Senate co-sponsors. It's a bipartisan bill. We have a Democratic sponsor in the House and a Republican sponsor in the Senate. But the thing that is so wonderful about this bill, and I hope all your listeners are listening, this bill affects people who usually don't find out that the hospitals are responsibility free until somebody dies. Mm. There are a number of people, but this is something all of your constituents can agree on. And in this year where there's so many contentious issues, it's a bill that you can feel good knowing you're representing almost every one of your constituents, unless they have an interest in a hospital or insurance company.
Right.
Well, Kim, thanks for calling. Andrew, are you familiar with that? Is that something that you are supportive of?
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you, you know, I'll stipulate just for the fact that we're not in Tallahassee yet, right? We get back there next week, and I have not seen this year's version of the bill, but what Kim was referring to, it has been run in the past, called the Free Kill Act, referring to the fact that some people are essentially free for somebody to kill through negligence because nobody can be held accountable. I supported the bill last year, and you know, barring any changes between last year and this, to the, I presume I'd probably support it again.
So, Andrew, thank you. Thanks for your answer to Kim. Tell us about some of the things that you personally are sponsoring in this next legislative session?
Yeah, so, you know, I think for people who don't know me well know that I'm a veteran, you know, served 12 years now and, you know, 5 years active duty and then the rest in the reserve. So a lot of my stuff is military and veteran focused. Last year passed a bill for military friendly schools. Now I'm the vice chairman of the Bipartisan Veterans Caucus. I think we have 39 veterans bills that we're running, everything from workforce licensing to help, you know, transitioning military families, their spouses find work when they get assigned to MacDill Air Force Base, but also, you know, schools near and dear to my heart. I've got a lot on the criminal justice front. I serve on basically every criminal justice committee. So trying to fix the crisis in our state prison system and making sure that we do right by the people there so we can cut down on some of the violence and make sure that our guards are better respected and that we do our best to support, you know, correctional officers in their, you know, this impossible task that they've been assigned right now.
Well, speaking of criminal justice, though, let me ask you, what about this proposal by Representative Alex Rizzo, who has a bill that would ban the public from, quote unquote, I'm using air quotes, harassing the police? I mean, like if someone's filming the police as they're giving a beatdown to someone on the street, is that going to be considered harassing those poor guys who have nothing but tasers and guns for protection?
Sure. Haven't looked at that particular one yet. I'm sure that would obviously be referenced to my committee. So definitely going to be, it sounds like. You know, I would point out that I think a lot of that is already a lot of these bills that are filed are actually already, you know, there's more than enough laws to prosecute the bad actors.
Right.
So we just want to make sure that the bills don't create too much overreach in new areas.
What do you, on the criminal justice front, what do you anticipate will go forward this year? I know there's always a slew of bills that are introduced. Last year, there was one bill that passed that had a lot of things in it. Maybe two. I don't remember for sure. But the one big bill. Is there something that this year may be moving that you anticipate will move and maybe pass this year? Can you look into that crystal ball?
Yeah, so I'll be. You know, I'd be kind of curious what Senator Cruz said about this. But honestly, my reading of the room so far is that there's not a lot of appetite for anything from the Republican leadership right now.
Really?
I think they want to pass their new map. It's a once in 10-year redistricting cycle. They want to do that. And I think they want to get back home to try to campaign and try to, you know, try to beat as many Democrats.
But they are going to take up a lot of time with these grandstanding type bills that maybe don't have a lot of chance of passing, but have a lot of popular support among the MAGA crowd. For example, there's this new bill to allow video and audio recordings of teachers in school classrooms and forcing teachers to wear microphones and allowing parents to review the videos of any incidents that may arise in class. That seems like a really aggressive push against the Florida public education system and the teachers that are in it. It's sponsored by Representative Bob Rommel from Naples.
Sure, yeah. But I guess the point I was made, there's a big difference between the bills that are filed and the bills that are heard.
Right, yeah.
Everybody files 7 bills, you know, so if you do the math on that, 120 members, 7 bills, lots of bills get filed every year. So far, in 6 committee weeks, I've heard 3.
Hmm.
So, and one of them was the same bill twice. So,
which bill was that?
I guess my point is leadership doesn't seem, at least what I've seen so far, they don't seem to have a huge appetite for getting a lot of these bills done.
So
pick and choose.
Two interesting things there, Andrew. One is that you mentioned that there's not a lot of appetite for doing anything this year among the majority in the legislature. Which is too bad because, you know, a big deal was made last year about the criminal justice system reform bill that was passed, and that was a a bipartisan effort, and of course, a lot of that came about because of the Black Lives Matter protests that happened last year and George Floyd's death. So there was seemed more interest in getting something done. But what you and Senator Cruz both said the same thing, that the most important thing that is happening this year is redistricting because of its huge, huge implications for the future of our country, really.
Yeah, because it's not just the state House and Senate districts that are being redistricted. The Florida legislature has the responsibility of redistricting all the congressional districts, federal,
right,
U.S. Congress districts as well.
So, yeah, so that'll make a difference in the makeup of Congress. And is that your – it sounds like that's your take, too, Representative Learned.
Absolutely. I do want to push back on one thing you said, though, about the criminal justice reforms they did last year. It is true that we passed a bipartisan criminal justice reform that was, positive. I was happy to support it. But don't let them off the hook for the fact they also, the governor's number one priority bill last year was House Bill 1.
The anti-protest bill.
Down on
protest. Yeah, right.
Yeah. So,
yeah. But it was
sometimes them not running a lot of bills is actually a good thing for us.
Right, yeah.
That's a double-edged sword.
Well, as Shelley said, it's a dangerous time of year when they're up there. Not you, Andrew, so it's just disappointing because there's so much that needs to be done in the criminal justice system. And how disappointing that was all we got was, that's all that happened was what happened last year. And to your point, negated perhaps by this other legislation.
Right.
If
we go back to your point on the mask, though, too. Everything from a woman's right to choose, reproductive health care, LGBTQ rights, voting rights, yeah, all of the things that we've been fighting, those fights only get harder if the Republicans are able to gerrymander us further into a super minority.
Right.
Like my seat, I won the closest election in the state in the House and kept us out of a super minority. That alone requires the Republican, it gives us power to prevent them from just ramming through things, waiving rules and stuff. We have to make sure that we hold that line there. We lost 5 seats last year.
Mm-hmm.
And what I think most people assumed was a good year because, we elected President Biden and got President Trump out of office. We also lost 5 seats in the state legislature, which only makes our path forward that much harder. Imagine how much harder it's going to be if they continue to pull back more and more seats,
right?
Like they're already trying to do. So, yes.
Matt, and you're running for re-election, aren't you, in 22?
Depending on the
map,
as everybody else is.
Right.
Depending on the map. So, and it's interesting, I just have to say, Representative, that both you and Senator Cruz have said that's the most important issue, and we should pay attention to it and be vigilant if you care about this sort of thing. But there's so little that you can do if you're opposed to the maps. There's not really, other than if afterwards maybe a lawsuit will be filed, but even there it looks like, I guess what Senator Cruz was saying, that probably may not work as well this time around as it did in the past. How frustrating does that feel for you, and how concerned are you?
Oh, it's incredibly frustrating. But I would definitely push back on the mindset that we can't be effective, right? Push back to bills and the process in general. I think that the overwhelming pushback when the proposal for Florida to take Texas's style abortion ban and run that. That came quick, fast, and fierce the day that bill was filed. And thankfully, we haven't heard anything of it since, right?
So, right.
It's an election year, and the Republicans are not, they need to get reelected too, right? So they also need to try to be as popular as they can. So we need to hold them accountable if they're overreaching, if they're trying to gerrymander, cut communities up and silence voices. Those are things that, the people really can, should, and we desperately need them to stand up and fight back so that we have a fair process as possible.
You mentioned that this is an election year, and one of our listeners sent an email, David sent an email saying that he thought it might be interesting for the listeners to know why it is that the session starts in January this year instead of March. And that is because it's an election year. So you start in January, there's more time to campaign and get ready for the November election. Is that generally why the session has been moved? I believe that's why it's in January instead of March. So every other year.
It's a twofold, the year after the election, it's later. You can argue it's later because they need to give you time from the point you get elected to when you go to Tallahassee, right? Like,
Okay, that's a different way to look at it.
Yeah, to get up to speed.
I only had 1 week between when I got elected and the first time I was in Tallahassee, right? So it is nicer to have a couple extra weeks there to understand some of the issues that maybe don't come up on the campaign trail but are very important to
folks. Although March was traditional and January was a new idea. I think traditionally...
Yeah. That was before my time. So I'll defer to you.
Well, I also want to just point out that sometimes the most important thing the minority party and the minority legislators can do is simply stick a finger in the dike. I mean, that just by being there, you can stop a lot of, you know, otherwise bad things that might come out of the legislature. But it does require that there be enough of you to do that.
Yes. I'm a guy who I think has a pretty good reputation of working across the aisle. And I would always point out that we don't have the votes to do that on our own. So that means we do need to be able to win over friends across the aisle. And thankfully, there are some with cooler heads who are willing to work with us when, their MAGA base goes a little too far in what they've been trying to do. But I would also point out, I think some of the most important things, the stuff that makes the news the most, are the fights that we have where, you know, Democrats are holding the line and fighting the Republicans on some of the truly awful things that they propose. But, you know, I passed the most bills of any Democrat last year as a freshman legislator, and I passed more than half the Republicans did. And those were great veteran-friendly bills. Those are bills that help small businesses, things that just moved the needle forward in small incremental ways, but just made our state better. So I don't think we should ever look past the little things that we do to just help our constituents. I mean, last week, I was able to be at Tampa International and welcome home a returning Afghan family, and was able to raise a bunch of money to get them, you know, a set of food, gift card, toys for the kids. Got him a job.
That's so great.
You know, we as Democrats are getting a lot done for our communities, irregardless of the stuff that makes the headline.
One of the areas where it seems like there has been movement, and where it seems like there is not a big appetite on the Republican side for more and greater restrictions is marijuana legislation. And you have some bills about marijuana that you've been pushing too, don't you?
I do. It's kind of funny, especially being a military vet, 12 years in service. I'm still actively in the reserve, so I get drug tests every month. I am not a user, but somehow I became the pot guy for legislature. Something my mom finds comical. There was a bill last year to really kill the medical marijuana industry in Florida. I was able to bring the sponsor of that bill around with some compromise legislation, and now we're running, running a bipartisan bill that I would argue really improves the program, makes it more affordable for patients to access their medicine, and at the same time keeping the harmful products away from kids. So making sure that minors aren't able to go buy synthetically made products, you know, kind of exploiting loopholes in the existing law. So we found the common ground and we agree. And thankfully, I'm running that bill with the chairman of the Republican Party of Florida.
Wow.
There you go.
Sometimes you can work with the other side.
Well, that's very good to hear. And the constituents in your district should pay close attention to that.
We've got an email from John Miller who asked this question. He's in Pinellas. It seems too easy for a lobbyist or a group like ALEC to get a bill introduced, but public attempts to do the same have lots of hurdles to overcome. Why is this? So that's you want to take a a gander at that one, Representative Learned? Why is it so hard for the public to get bills introduced, but Alec can hand them out like candy?
Yeah, so first and foremost, when it comes to introducing bills, it's actually really easy to get a senator to introduce a bill because they have an unlimited amount of bills that they can introduce. So really, I would just argue they need to have a meeting with their senator and try to fight for it. The hard part is really on the House side where I'm at, because we are limited by rule. We can only propose 7 bills. So
you really have to prioritize.
Yeah, you really do. And if you're like me and you try to really pass them, that means a lot of the work that I did this past summer was trying to count votes and make sure that I have support for the things that I'm going to be proposing. So, mm-hmm. I think the reason why, our opposition is able to get these big bills heard and through is because they just have the numbers, right?
Yeah. They have the members.
We need to elect more Democrats, and that's how we're going to change, I think.
But the difference, we think, between a lobbyist and a group like Alex and the general public is that lobbyists have lots of money, they can spread it around, and they have access, it's just whereas an individual, it's hard for an individual, I think, but if you're part of a group or a community, you do some community organizing, that might make it easier, but an individual certainly has nowhere near the power or access of a lobbyist or a group like Alec, where they're just, they're part of the system.
Sure. There are people everywhere, though, that find ways. Like, if you have a good idea and the ear of a member, just email every day, call their office, show up. Like, a handful of people have come by my office just stopping in to talk to me about things, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, truthfully. So if you're if you're sitting at home and you're in Brandon and Riverview and you want to come talk to me, just show up and talk to me about stuff. That's how you can actually, you have more access here being a constituent than any lobbyist does in Tallahassee. They're going to camp up there in my office, but believe me, the people back home that ask you to do stuff, those are the ones you remember the most.
Hmm. Well, I don't think that many people realize that senators have an unlimited number of bills that they can introduce, and House members are limited to only 7. I think that's new information to a lot of people, and so I think they should pay attention to that and act accordingly. Contacting their senators, in particular, lobbying their senators, getting together, like Janet said, with other people who share the same community of interest in organizing.
And, Representative Learned, is there any other bills that you've sponsored that you want to talk about before we've got just 2 minutes to go?
Yeah, one of my favorites is the home kitchen bill. This is a bill people to sell home cooked meals from that they prepare in their home kitchen. It increases safety standards for that, but really it's a great bill that would empower small businesses and home chefs across the state. Definitely would encourage people to take a look. And if you have any information about that one I have a Medicaid bill trying to help with reimbursement rates and trying to help our hospitals durable medical equipment sale, home health. Got stuff for schools and all sorts of little things. But if you're interested in any of it, andrewlearned.com/priorities, it's all there.
Tell us a little bit more about the home cooking bill. So that would be, are there inspections required? How do you make sure it's safe?
Yeah, so all the food would have to be labeled as coming from a home cooker, obviously. I always tell people when they ask, like, this does not mean you have to buy it. It just means that you have a right to.
To make it, yeah.
Right. But really, it doesn't change the food safety standards at all. The only thing it does is it changes some of the pre-permitting requirements. Right now, to start a restaurant or a commercial kitchen, it can cost upwards of $500,000.
Wow.
So this really helps. Those micro businesses get started.
So your home kitchen would have to be inspected, like Janet asked? Like, do I have to clean before they come?
You would have to meet all of I'm trying to answer this correctly. You have to meet all of the same food safety standards.
Okay.
You don't have to get the pre-permitting. Like, you don't have to have a restaurant inspector come out before you start cooking. But if there is a violation, like if you if you sold something that did get somebody sick and they filed a complaint,
I got to cut you off, Representative Learned, but thank you. And go to andrewlearned.com and learn more about this bill if you're interested. I want to thank Representative Learned for being with us, Senator Janet Cruz for being with us, our phone answerer, Frank. Please stay tuned for Duncan Strauss with Talking Animals next. This is WMNF Tampa.